You're listening to The Block Experience, all things decentralized and open source. Enjoy.
Hey everyone, sorry to interrupt the podcast here. I just want to say this episode of The Block Experience is brought to you by our first sponsor, PrimeXBT. Whether you're looking to trade some of your favorite cryptocurrencies such as Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Litecoin, or even venture into other markets, PrimeXBT always has you covered. PrimeXBT offers traders access to a large variety of markets, including cryptocurrencies, stock indices, commodities, and even Forex pairs, and also have some incredible features such as anonymous accounting, Bitcoin deposits and withdrawals, industry-leading security, and even the ability to offer 1,000 times leverage. I've personally been using PrimeXBT for my trading for the past few months and have had a great experience using the platform, also using the platform's customer service. So I'm really proud that they're supporting this episode of the podcast, bringing you guys free podcasts every week. A link to the services PrimeXBT provide will be below, also a link to sign up to a new account. So thanks again, PrimeXBT, for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. And yeah, I hope you continue and like the podcast. Enjoy. Cool. So firstly, Birch, massive thank you for you taking the time out of your day today to come have a little chat with me. Just to kick things off, why don't you tell us a little bit about how you originally got interested in Bitcoin and like how you originally got interested in the space, I guess.
Oh yeah, the old origin story.
Yeah.
One I've told many times. As the legend goes, the year was 2015. Late 2015, really wasn't one of those guys who will tell you like, oh yeah, I heard about Bitcoin in 2011, but then I lost my hard drive. The truth is I had never really heard about Bitcoin, even though I'm kind of a tech nerd and was very interested in all sorts of different types of emerging tech until 2015. And I actually don't remember exactly where I heard about it for the first time. But it was September of 2015, and I actually downloaded Coinbase to buy my first handful of Bitcoin. So even though 2015 was kind of a long time ago now, 5 years, and I think most people consider it to be pretty early, I still had the luxury of just buying Bitcoin on Coinbase. Coinbase was obviously much newer at the time, and basically, I accidentally bought kind of the bottom of Bitcoin. So for people who don't know the full price history, Bitcoin had pumped up to like $1,000 from, you know, zero over the course of a couple of years. And then it crashed, and it crashed all the way down to, I think, like $200. Mm-hmm. And my first Bitcoin that I bought was around $237. And I still have the email from Coinbase confirming my first purchase. So it's kind of a memento for me. But the reason that I wanted to buy that Bitcoin to begin with is because I was a big fan of playing blackjack online and poker. Mm. But I had recently really gotten into blackjack more so. And by the way, blackjack online is a total scam. I don't recommend it. it's a total scam. But I came across a online casino called BitStars. And they, just like you would expect, I mean, it's a casino that allows you to deposit crypto and then gamble with that crypto. And so that was kind of my first foray into owning cryptocurrency. But it wasn't for about another year or so that I started actually taking more interest in the entire ecosystem, started to learn more about what it really was, why it was important. And eventually my kind of obsession, you know, led me to Ethereum. And that's kind of where I got, I would say, my first break. I mean, I did really well buying Bitcoin at $200, but not nearly as well as I did buying Ether at $7 and $8.
Right.
And so that was kind of what really gave me got me addicted was buying a ton of Ether at very cheap prices and making a lot of money as a result. And the rest is history. You know, I spent the time pretty much every day since, you know, trying to do everything from learning how to trade to researching and analyzing different cryptos and technologies and traveling to conferences and networking, and just kind of really became my entire life after that.
Amazing. Before I ask you some general like Bitcoin questions and stuff, like what's your opinion right now on like Ethereum? Because obviously we've seen this parabolic growth with DeFi over the last like year. ETH 2.0 is phase zero is coming out, I think quarter three of this year. Are you still bullish on Ethereum like long term? And yeah, what's your opinion on it?
Yeah, man. I'm bullish on cryptocurrency as a sector, right? And I see cryptocurrency largely as an investment vehicle for startups. I feel like crypto largely, it's not the sole use case, okay? But largely, and there's nothing wrong with this, is an investment vehicle for startups. It's a fundraising technique. It's not much different than seed invest or Kickstarter in that sense. Crypto is a financial ecosystem that has no borders and allows people, no matter where they're at or where they're from, to invest into startups that they want to support. We saw that with the the ICO bubble in 2018, and the rest is kind of history. So with Ether in particular, because I'm bullish on the sector as a whole, I have to by default be bullish on Ethereum. Right. Unfortunately, I'm, from a price action standpoint, bullish on XRP as well, and even Bitcoin Cash. The reality is, I don't think we're in a place yet, and I don't know if we'll ever get to a place where, you know, those majors really fall apart, those major coins fall apart without the entire ecosystem kind of crumbling underneath it. So from a price action perspective, I'm extremely bullish on Ethereum. I have access to it, or I have exposure rather to it myself.
But like, let's say back in that ICO big frenzy we saw back in the 2017, how do we get from there to doing it? Because it sort of left a sour taste in the mouth of a lot of investors in the space who thought they were investing in like proper startups and like good companies. And then we saw a lot of exit scams and stuff. So how do we shift people's opinions into a more positive place? And the next time this happens, things can be a lot more regulated, you know?
Yeah, well, just that, right? Regulations, rules. But also, I think we learn as people from our failures far more, you know, effectively than we learn from our successes. And so maybe that was a necessary evil, right? And maybe it was something that needed to happen really in order to set the new foundation to unfortunately, it happened very quickly. I mean, most people don't that I speak to anyways. They think if you owned cryptocurrency in 2017, it was no brainer. You got rich. It was easy. Anyone could do it. When the reality was, that's not what I saw. I saw over the course, I lived the bull market, you know, and I was in it. I was more deeply, you know, into it than 99.9% of people. And the vast majority of people that I saw while we were in the midst of a bull market were getting absolutely housed because they were panic switching between Bitcoin and alts. They were holding Bitcoin and getting wrecked, losing their Bitcoin balances because they were holding and then switching. And the entire thing was over in 3 weeks. I think that might have been a necessary evil. I do support further regulations, within reason. And that can be a whole nother debate, but people do need to be protected from themselves in a lot of ways. I'm not a fan of like accredited investor requirements and things like that, because I don't think you should have to have a liquid net worth of, you know, $1 million or 250K, you know, yearly income just to be able to buy some shit coins. I don't think that's necessarily fair either, but there's somewhere in between. And ultimately I think that stuff probably had to happen. And in regards to having a sour taste in your mouth, that may be true for the 0.00001% of anyone on earth who's ever owned a cryptocurrency. But the reality is the entire cryptocurrency market is worth like 1/10 of what Apple alone is worth. And even at its peak, it was worth as an entirety, its entire market cap was worth, you know, one or two major companies in the stock market. It's just such a small niche financial sector today. And as we grow over the next few decades, people aren't going to really remember 2017 or 2018. And people are going to be going where the money is. And I think a lot of the money is going to be flowing into crypto.
And I think a lot of people think, because they're getting in now, like the mentality you have when someone new gets into the space is that they think they're late to the party, right? And I think we're so early in the space still that a lot of these issues we see So for example, like the MakerDAO situation, which happened 2 weeks ago, I think, was like huge, but it gets resolved and we move on and we learn from these mistakes. That's how, I think that's how early we are, that we're just going with the flow. We fix whatever's broken and then we just keep going forward, you know?
No, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And yeah, go ahead.
You finish your conversation. I was going to move on to something else.
No, that's fine. I was just going to harp on what you said. Just going to piggyback on what you said.
So like what I wanted to mention next was that when I got into the space, which was early 2018, everyone used to say like Bitcoin is like a hedge against not really traditional markets, but like the US dollar. And like, I guess it was like a store value. That's what it was like marketed as, I guess, to some people, some others, maybe a payment system. But like over the last 3 months with this whole recession and like the economy right now, Bitcoin's taken a hit pretty much the same size as like traditional markets. And I've heard some people saying that maybe this has affected like sort of the underlying core selling point of Bitcoin. What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, well, I would say that this is extenuating circumstances for sure. Absolutely no market, whether it be precious metals,
right,
or currencies like FX or anything else, has been unaffected. The mortgage, real estate, nothing's gone unaffected. So judging Bitcoin versus the dollar over the course of this pandemic, again, as I just stressed, this market is so impossibly small relative to even just the United States stock market, let alone the global economic market, or derivatives or something to that effect, which are multi-quadrillion market cap, you know, quadrillions of dollars of market cap in terms of derivatives. It's so small that if you actually thought Bitcoin would be not negatively affected as a result of the global economy beginning to collapse underneath a pandemic that's unlike anything we've seen in human history, then you were being naive and foolish. And that's just silly to think. So just because, you know, Bitcoin has also seen some negative price action as a result of coronavirus and things like that, doesn't necessarily mean all of a sudden it's correlated. But the truth is, Bitcoin's always been somewhat correlated to the dollar, to the tune of like 12 or 13%. And you know, let's kind of hold judgment on that. Let's wait to see as the economy does start to strengthen again, as we start to put this stuff behind us, you know, how the different markets are affected, you know, and kind of make our decision from there.
Yeah, I actually don't think it's that bad. Like, we was at what, 11 or 10,000 like 3 months ago. Now we're at 7,000. This could be a whole lot worse, in my opinion. We could be at 1K right now, I think.
Yeah, we definitely could be, and I think that's one of the benefits to it being such a small market too. It's not that hard to prop up. The reality is, it's not that hard to prop up Bitcoin. It's not that hard to keep it above the threshold of mining profitability. And it's easy to be a fearmonger and say, oh, fuck, if the whole global economy is crashing, no one wants to own Bitcoin. I don't necessarily think that's true. The smartest investors, they're people who are anxious to buy the dip. They're people who are excited about buying blood in the streets. And that doesn't just go for crypto. That goes across all markets. Myself personally, I've never been more excited to start seriously evaluating real estate over the next 12 months, to start seriously evaluating moving some more of my cryptocurrency net worth into the traditional markets, which I've had limited exposure to over the last 18 months since I, you know, left corporate America and sold out some of my stocks and things like that. So now I'm looking to buy more Bitcoin. I'm looking to buy more stocks. I'm looking to buy some real estate. For me, this is an opportunity. I think other investors, at least savvy investors, probably feel the same way.
Right. And I think if we compare 2018, the sell-off in early 2018 to now, like there was no real reason to drop in 2018 apart from we was in a sort of an ICO bubble and everyone wanted to get their money out and it was just panicking on top of panic on top of panic. If we look at 2020, like this is a real reason to panic. Like people want cash. Right. And people are actually buying. The price is above $7,000.
Right.
So I don't
yeah,
think...
Yeah, I mean, 2018 was the result of, you know, parabolia. Saw a parabolic movement of an asset. And, it, you know, we all remember what happened. Hmm. To your point, yeah, this is a real reason to panic. But those of us who are still participating in this digital ecosystem, at least on a regular basis, we're not selling anymore. Like we're not, we may be short-term shorting or something to that effect, but you know, at this point, most of us, I think, are pot committed, you know, and that's an old gambling term, right? My chips are in, and at this point, I'm committed, and I know what exposure I want to cryptocurrency. And at this point, I'm either going down with the ship,
right.
or it's not going down. You know, at some point, you know, you have to understand that so many of us that support this space, we're in, and this isn't going to be what gets us out. That was different in 2018. So many of us made so much money, theoretically, made so much money on paper that it was fiscally irresponsible not to sell as you saw the world panic selling. But those retail traders, we're all retail traders, but those real noob crypto hodlers, the Uber drivers through to the call center reps to the average Joes that were all buying Ripple and Bitcoin and Ethereum and all that shit back in the bubble, they're already long gone. Those guys are out. So, you know, who's left? It's those of us that are pretty serious about either riding this shit to zero or really reaping the rewards in the coming years.
Right. I have this weird theory that. So every time we've seen a halving in the past, well, this is the first one I've been a part of. I think you might have been a part of one previously, right?
Technically, but not really.
Right. And every time we see a halving, either right before or a month, give or take, or right after, there's always this huge drop in price, maybe 30 or 20%, obviously, which is done by manipulators to get people to sell their bags so they can buy up the price action at a lower price. I sort of feel like this is a perfect storm where the manipulators could use this world catastrophe and like the pressure of the economics in the US and around the world to sort of scare people even more to buy the price even lower. What do you reckon?
Probably not. Not to say that I don't necessarily like a good conspiracy theory. I just don't think it's as complicated as that. Like, I don't think
people just want cash, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that there's some, you know, giant whale group all, you know, conspiring against the average person to push the price. You know, sure, manipulation absolutely happens, but man, it's so much easier to manipulate the average shitcoin or to fish the average user out of their Binance account than it is to try to really mess with the price of Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, and there's not a huge incentive for some of these whales to do it. It's not. You know, the largest holders of Bitcoin by far are exchanges like Binance and BitMEX, and you know, some of these larger mining operations. You know, ultimately, I don't think they're participating in mass level manipulation to try to do anything fancy. Definitely for some of the smaller altcoins out there, that's stuff that you'll continue to see. That there will always be manipulation in any market where there's an opportunity to make money, but at a large scale for Bitcoin in particular, you know, I don't necessarily get behind some of the conspiracy theories.
Yeah. So over the last few years, how have you seen the space evolve? Both like more socially, like on Twitter and stuff, like sort of seems like there's a lot of people right now who are just here to sort of get followers, and then they like the price of Bitcoin. Obviously, people like newts come into the space and they can be swayed by people's opinions and stuff. What's your opinion on like the social impact on Twitter and stuff like that?
Yeah, so the reality is Twitter is such a small echo chamber. It's such a small, to us, it's a big deal. To guys like me and you who spend a large percentage of our time there, for me anyways, largely because I've come up with a lot of guys, like we came up together, you know, whether it be, you know, my homies Crypto Dog or Cred or Luke Martin or whomever, like we've all kind of grown up together in this space. And this is how we stay in touch and how we bounce ideas and how we shit post and shit talk. And, you know, anytime that there's a way to make money, there will always be people who, you know, have bad intentions. Mm. And so as as a society, we need to be mindful of these quote influencer experts at large, not just in crypto. I mean, if you've seen Forex Instagram, you'll see where the real problem lies. That's a bunch of LARPers. If you know, CT, you know, crypto Twitter's got its fair share of LARPers, no doubt, but not nearly as bad as FX Instagram or you know, MLM, you know, Facebook groups or what. It's just that's just the age we live in, and we need to be smart as people to try to weed through the noise. The benefit of the last 2 years has been so many people finally kind of dying off. Like, man, I can remember it was so much worse in terms of blatant scams, you know, the Ethereum scams that used to go on, just the you know, paid group leaders. And by the way, not all paid groups are bad. Actually, some of them are really run quite well, but many of them, especially in 2017, 2018, were trying to set up like funds where people would give them their money and then they would trade, like all that crap. So much of that is gone, but make no mistake, it'll come right back as soon as the fish are in the water. And we just need to do our part, I think, as people with a voice, as people with a platform, to continue to try to point people in the right direction, you know, and try to make sure people are aware that these sorts of things exist. It's not because crypto is some scam heavy industry. I've met so many fantastic people in this space, far more than I've met bad people. It's just that's the world we live in, with a global social, you know, reach across all industries. That's just the world we live in.
Yeah, I completely agree. And this segues us quite nicely into, if you don't want to trade and you're afraid of getting like, taking people's opinions and getting burned, then you can always like use algos to trade, right? And do you want to just talk a little bit about what you're doing with Stacked Crypto and what you guys are doing over there?
Sure. Yeah. I'll take any opportunity I can. So, you know, yes and no to your question. You know, algos, I believe anyways, are, if you're choosing the right ones, should be a part of anybody's trading strategy if they want to be a more active trader. Some percentage. I don't think anyone should put all their money into any algo anywhere, no matter how well that algo's done. You know, me personally, 5% of my crypto holdings are allocated towards some algorithmic trading on Stacked, and the other 95% of my holdings are held in a longer term investment portfolio, which is made up primarily of Bitcoin and then some others. And so the first piece is, I don't believe the average person listening to this or following us on Twitter should be trading at all, with algos or not. It is not, you know, it's silly to think that people have more success trading crypto than they could trading stocks or Forex. Trading is a losing game for most people. It always has been, it always will be, and there's a lot of reasons for that. The primary reason is the reason that people fail at anything. They don't put enough time and energy into doing it right. People want to get rich quickly. Most, if not all, people listening to this podcast right now are more than competent enough to be successful as traders. Really, you need to learn risk management. And if you can learn how to manage your risk and manage your losses, you can be a successful trader. The question isn't whether or not you're competent enough or smart enough. And it's certainly not that the information isn't available. It's all available, and it's all available for free. The question is whether or not you'd actually enjoy doing it. And the reality is, I love poker and I'm pretty good at it. And when I play with my friends, I on average do pretty well. But there was a time where I thought that I could sit on my computer for 8 hours a day and try to play poker to make money. And I learned very quickly how much I didn't actually like poker. What I liked was sitting on the table with my boys, you know, throwing some money around, smoking a cigar. And crypto is no different. So many people think that they want to be a day trader because they see people making money doing it. Right. Without being willing to put in the years that it takes to get good at anything like that, the years that it takes good, or that it takes to become a master of anything or to become proficient in it. And people want quick, and they just end up getting wrecked, and then they blame other people, and all this other stuff goes on. So for 9 out of 10 of you guys listening, don't trade. You will not do well, and you won't do well because you have other things going on in your life, and this isn't that important to you. And I don't want you to learn that lesson the hard way. So for those people, I believe that they shouldn't use algos. I believe that they shouldn't try to day trade. I believe that they should buy a pre-built index that's designed by someone much smarter than us, There's many to choose from, and put their whatever they want to invest into cryptocurrency, put it into a diversified index that rebalances over time, and become a long-term passive investor and buy in as you can, the same way you would do to the S&P 500. And if you want to buy one of those indexes, you can do that on Stacked Crypto. You can connect to your Binance account. You can go to trystack.com, you can connect your Binance account, and you can buy a pre-built index, and you can just set it and forget it. For the 10% of people listening who are like, no, I get it. Like me and you, we're like, I'm going to be an investor, but I want a little bit of action. I don't necessarily want to be a full-time trader, but I want some action. I want some daily action. Then algos are a fantastic way to get exposure to that. And at Stacked anyways, I think the reason that we've done so well in our short period of time being public and why we've been able to do over $250 million with the trading volume for our users is because of the transparency our platform offers. It shows you the real actual performance of different bots, not backtest data, not crap. It gives you real risk management tools and really makes using algos very, very simple. And if an algo sucks, then it says that it sucks. On our website, it says, this algo sucks. Look at the performance. It sucks. Don't buy this algo. Eventually, we'll delist that algo if it doesn't get better. And being transparent with users at least gives users a shot at finding something that might work for them. And they can take a stab at it. They can throw a small percentage of their tradable assets into an algo and see how it goes for them. And what we've seen, at least for our users, is it's been extremely profitable on average because of the way that we've kind of designed the system.
Yeah, everything you said, I couldn't agree more with. Like, 95%, let's say, of your portfolio should be in long-term holdings if you want to really be in this space and actually make money. Like, that 5% you use to trade is just for, like, personal fun, just, like, trading, like, getting practice in, you know. You only want to be a day trader until you're a day trader, and then you don't want to be a day trader anymore. That shit is, like, really brutal.
It's brutal. And some people are cut out for it, man. Right. Some people are really good at it. Just like some people are cut out to be professional basketball players or music artists or accountants, right? But most of us would hate being an accountant. Most of us would hate being an entrepreneur. I love being an entrepreneur. Most of you guys listening would absolutely fucking hate my life. You would be driven crazy by it. So often people get caught up in the successes. They see the successes of an entrepreneur or of a trader. And it's, oh, I wanna do that. And the reason they wanna do it is because they see the success, they see the money, but they don't see what goes into it. And that's what leads to people failing.
Right, I think if you listen to this right now and you really want to make money in this space and actually be in this space and be, you know, someone who contributes a lot to the space, you should have been spending the last 2 years building something. Like, that's how you make money in this space. You build something which produces money and you don't spend your time 50 leveraging on BitMEX, you know?
Right. Yeah, no, definitely. And when it comes to building something, that doesn't necessarily mean, again, being like an entrepreneur. You know, I have a great team around me at Stacked. We have a large team now. I'm the entrepreneur. My co-founder and a couple of the higher ups within my organization, we're entrepreneurs. The rest of the people on my team, they're just people who love building stuff. And they're doing very, you know, very good things. They're having a lot of fun. They're doing something they're very passionate about. And if we're successful as a business long-term, they will reap the rewards financially as well. You don't have to be the CEO or the entrepreneur in order to get rich, you know, off of your passion. You can be the lead developer. You can be a graphic designer and you can be our lead designer and get some equity. There's a lot of ways that you can follow your passion and the money will come down the road if you surround yourself with the right people. So it's not always about being the number one guy. In fact, the number 10 guy at Facebook is a billionaire. The number 10 guy at Uber is a billionaire. I was number 150 at Grubhub, which went on to be a $15 billion startup. I didn't start that company. I'm an entrepreneur, but I didn't start that company. I followed my passion. I worked within that organization to do something I loved. And we went public and went on to be worth many billions of dollars. And needless to say, the options that I received as a result were life-changing for me. So there's many different ways to follow your passion and still reap the financial reward without being a degen leverage trader on BitMEX or quitting your job to be some full-time entrepreneur or something to that effect.
100%. Couldn't agree more. So one last question. What are some of the things you're excited to see grow over the next 3 to 5 years? Are you excited for stuff like banking the unbanked on like the DeFi space or like maybe mainstream adoption with like gaming? But just what are you excited to see?
You know, I probably talk about this particular topic for half an hour by itself, but I would say I'm most excited for the global just connectivity that crypto allows. And this isn't just in crypto, this is on the internet in general. You know, I think we're going to be at a point in the next half decade where it is very, very common to have friends that speak completely different languages, to have business associates that come from completely different parts of the world, to invest in or alongside people of all creed and color and religion all over the place, because of how technology will continue to evolve. It won't be more than a couple few more years to where I can have a full-blown conversation just like I'm having with you right now, but the person on the other end of the line doesn't even speak English. That's really exciting to me, because right now we still live in this tiny bubble. Even you and I, and we're across the pond, right? You're in the UK, I'm in the US. Right. It's still a tiny English-speaking bubble. We haven't even begun to realize any of the potential of Asia's economy and vice versa. That's what I'm excited for, and crypto really helps do that because of its decentralized nature. I think it'll be far more common for people in the US to bank in some capacity with a decentralized service, with some of their assets being backed by underlying cryptos, whether it be stable coins or Bitcoin or whatever the case may be, as opposed to using Chase. And I don't even know if you have Chase in the UK, but like here in America, everybody uses, not everybody, but like we all use like Bank of America or Chase or something like that. And in the UK, you probably have your couple of big banks too. Right. I think what we begin to see is that starts to fall apart and everything becomes just more global. And that multiplies our reach by 1,000 times. You know, there's so much of this world. There's 7+ billion people on planet Earth, and we're connected to less than 1 billion of them. And shit, half of those 7 billion people don't even have internet. So there's a lot that's going to be happening in the next couple of decades. And I do believe that blockchain, and I do believe that crypto, and this decentralized finance world, is going to play a pretty major role in bridging the gap globally. And that's what I'm most excited about.
Yeah, I fucking completely agree, bro. Yeah, but like you were saying with the banking thing, in the UK, we're seeing like a lot of like more independent banks, like target between 20 and 30 year olds. And they just have like a sick UI. Like you can set up a bank account just with the click of a button, or like a joint account or a business account. And it looks really sick. It tells you like what you're spending, and the UI looks good. And they are getting loads of adoption, like with 20 to 25 year olds.
Absolutely. We have a couple of those types of startups too. Like Chime is one that comes to mind. Yeah. Really excited about that. And again, I believe that crypto, really presents a unique investment. Yeah, it's an extension, and it presents a unique investment opportunity for average people. Historically, you could have never invested in Grubhub, which is the startup that I was a part of here in the States, unless you worked there as an early employee like I did, or unless you were some private wealthy investor who got to participate in a seed round. Until they went public, you couldn't buy that stock. You couldn't get options for a dollar that went on to be worth $150 each. That was impossible. Why? Because you're not an accredited investor who knows a lot of rich people. Crypto removes that barrier. That's what I love most about it, is it allows us regular people, I'm just a kid from the neighborhood, very modest beginnings. It allows us to participate in this exciting new economy at a global scale, invest in startups that we believe in, have some skin in the game, and take some of those risks. And as a result of taking those risks, you'll lose money. You will not always win. And I think those are some very valuable learning experiences that make us better in the long term. And ultimately, I think that's good for everybody to learn some of those. Like, I failed at 10 startups before I ever wrote myself my own check. If I hadn't had those failures, if I had been allowed to take those chances and then fail as a result, I didn't need the government to prop me up. I didn't need the government to protect me from failure. But if I hadn't had those failures, I would have never found the success. I would have never learned those hard lessons. And I think crypto allows us to continue to have some of that accountability. And again, at a global scale, I think it makes for a really sick opportunity.
Yeah, I completely agree. Where can people find you if they want to check out Stacked or yourself? Just a little...
Yeah, so follow me on Twitter, Bitcoin Birch. You may already. If you do, say hello. Shoot me a comment. I'll follow you back. we can become friends. That's how you and I became friends.
And then play Call of Duty.
Cactus here has become my new best friend. So sorry to everyone else who thought they were my number one. Cactus is my new number one for now anyways. And say hi. And yeah, we'd love for you to check out Stacked. We're doing some really exciting stuff. We're trying to really automate the digital investing experience while maintaining non-custody, while not being custodial, meaning you get to hold your crypto wherever you want to hold it and take advantage of some of these pre-built indices or even some of the most successful trading algos that are available to consumers. And you can check us out at trystacked.com or at stackedcrypto on Twitter.
Amazing. Thank you.